Well, I'd like to thank you again for the invitation to be here. It's always great to be here. So what I would like to do today is give a survey starting in very old times, 100 years ago, and sort of try to give the survey in such a way that it is also accessible to people not working in the area. And I would like to end up with sort of this little bit of the state of the art, showing that the area of functional differential equations, especially equations of Volterra type, they really provide a number of very interesting computational, also theoretical challenges. So I hope you go home, have lots of problems and papers coming out of this particular talk. So as I said, let me start with a problem which probably will make you walk out because you think this is insulting to start with something so simple. But we shall see as we go along that the problem has a lot of relevance to so-called integral algebraic equations, which I'm going to talk about in the second part of this lecture. So this is a very old problem that goes back to these fundamental papers of Vita Volterra in 1896. In fact, if you look closely at this paper, this is also the first paper on the numerical analysis of Volterra equations. It's well hidden. Of course, numerical analysis as a subject area didn't exist really except for the work of Kutta and Runge. So what I'm looking at is at Volterra operators. So for the moment, let's assume everything is scalar, real. So we have a very nice kernel function, k, and we have this operator, which is an integral going from 0 to t, k, ts, given function phi. So assume we are in the space of continuous functions. If you don't like continuous functions, go to L2. I mean, things work. But since I talk about collocation methods, the space of continuous functions is sort of right. And we know there is an important special case part of this equation here. If the kernel function k is identically 1, then the unique solution of this problem under the assumption that g of 0 is equal to 0 is just a derivative of the right-hand side, assuming g is in 1. So what Volterra called this paper the inversion of definite integrals, so basically a part of solving this equation numerically gives you numerical differentiation, if you like. So the problem I'm going to look at is, suppose you would like to solve an equation of this type by collocation using piecewise polynomials. In the general notation, they are polynomials of degree m plus d and have a continuity class cd. And I shall assume in the following that the value of d is either 0 or is equal to 1. So these are sort of the, d is minus 1, where you have finite jumps at the mesh points, or d is equal to 0, where you work with continuous piecewise polynomials of degree m plus d. So the two spaces I'm looking at is the space Sm minus 1 minus 1, which for m equal to 1 includes the step functions, and so on. So the general problem is take your interval I on which you would like to solve the equation, discretize, introduce a not necessarily uniform mesh called I sub h, and then define a space of piecewise polynomials according to this well-known definition. And the basic principle of collocation is you would like to find an element in this space which satisfies the given equation on a suitable finite subset of the interval. So this is a set of what I call collocation points. And if you look at the dimension of these spaces, then we see immediately if you work with any d for fixed m, then you have m collocation points in each of the subintervals tn, tn plus 1. So it's just a matter of looking at dimensions. And then something where I'm cheating a little bit, I shall focus mainly on the case where I allow jumps at the mesh points. And it turns out if you look at first kind equations where you have a boundary layer phenomenon, this not insisting on continuity at the mesh points brings in a lot of flexibility. So the method is what you might call self-correcting. In other words, if you insist on tying the pieces together continuously, then you lose that flexibility, and there also is sort of usually a phenomenon called weak instability associated with continuous polynomial spaces. So we shall see why this space, in a way, is much more complicated and less satisfactory, both theoretically and numerically. So I shall mainly focus on this case. So this means that we have a space of collocation points consisting of m distinct points in each subinterval, and of course we don't need any initial conditions. If you look at this particular space here where you insist on continuity, then you see immediately from the dimension, that dimension in this particular case is n times n, which is covered by the number of collocation points, but then you have to satisfy an additional condition to generate a unique element. And one way of doing this, or the way people have been doing it, is to use an initial condition, which of course for an equation of this particular type is not a natural thing to do. It's not a part of the given equation. It's easy to derive an initial condition, but you have to differentiate the equation to actually get it. So this is one of the reasons when you work with equations of the first kind of this particular type, and later on with analogous delay equations, this is really the natural space to work with. And I hope things will become clearer as I go along why this is in fact true. So what I would like to do in the next few slides is briefly recall some of the classical results on what you can expect with respect to convergence. So these are results that have been known for 15, 20 years or so, but I think they may be new for some of you, and it sort of puts later discussion in some sort of perspective. So let's look at the case, as I said, t equal to minus 1. You have piecewise polynomials of degree m minus 1, starting with step functions, which are allowed to have jumps at the mesh points. So there's a result which says, and perhaps surprisingly for some of you, if you decrease the mesh size, then you may not necessarily get uniform convergence of the collocation solution to the exact solution. So this is very typical for what you might call ill-posed problems. In fact, you only get convergence if the collocation points satisfy a certain condition, namely this condition that this row M, which is the product 1 minus ci over ci, except for the minus sign, to some power in front of it, is in the interval minus 1, 1. So if you're outside, for example, if you take m equal to 1, then you have just one collocation point in each subinterval. So this collocation point must be at least 1/2 or larger. If you collocate in the left-hand side of the subinterval, then you get a divergent collocation solution. And of course, remember this also applies to numerical differentiation in this particular space. The way you prove it, and probably if you get bored in the talk, take 5 minutes, write the proof down. For example, write it down for the constant kernel k, then you will see this rho m is really the spectral radius of a rank 1 matrix, which arises from applying the collocation method. And when you look at this system of difference equations of order 1, you only get convergence if the spectral radius of that matrix is between minus 1 and 1. So this is an old result, about a little over 20 years old. It was proved in a special form by De Hoogh and Weiss in the early 70s, not in the context of collocation methods, but in what turned out to be discretized versions of this particular collocation method. What happens if you insist on continuity? Well, let's perhaps start with the case down here. I mean, many people would be tempted to say, well, if you do collocation, use collocation at the Gauss points because this gives you high-order convergence. Well, it turns out if you insist on continuity, I mean, if you have these spaces here where d is equal to 0, so polynomials of degree m, piecewise polynomials which are continuous, then it turns out collocation at the Gauss points gives you a divergent collocation approximation. So this is a fairly recent result, which was proved by Jean-Paul Cauton and myself in a recent paper. So it turns out if you insist on continuity, as I said before, then you have to be much more careful with collocation. And there's a general result which says if you choose the collocation points in a symmetric way, in the interval 0, 1, like the Gauss points, then the collocation solution is divergent. But there exist non-symmetric convergent collocation methods. If you fix the last collocation parameter to be equal to 1, remember these parameters, Cm, which characterize the collocation point, suppose you collocate always at the right endpoint of each subinterval, then it, like the Radau 2 points for the ODE people, then it turns out you do get the convergent solution subject to a condition which is very similar to the one you have up here. we see immediately here, of course, if CM is equal to 1, then this product collapses to 0, and we will always have convergence. But down here, things get a little more complicated. What happens if you insist on higher degrees? Remember in the, or some of you will remember in the mid-60s, cubic splines were the fashion. Well, it turns out cubic splines lead to divergent solutions. But there is still some gap in the theory of collocation methods for these kind of equations, namely what happens if you're sort of in between. There are some partial results. For example, you can show that if you're in S21, quadratic splines, quadratic piecewise polynomials in C1, then in fact you get the divergence. So there's sort of a fairly complete theory, but there are still some gaps. From the computational point of view, of course, this seems to indicate this is the space of choice you would like to use. Well, let's move a little closer to the present time. Why are first-kind Volterra equations still interesting? Well, some of you will know they occur all over the place, and one of the area of interest to me is when you use boundary integral equations. So let me just illustrate this by a very simple, very well-known problem with a single-layer potential. So if you take the heat equation, linear diffusion equation, subject to very classical conditions, so you have a boundary condition, suppose you have a zero initial condition, then it is well known that you can rephrase the whole problem by just solving the problem on the boundary. Suppose at the moment I work in R2, so you get an integral equation of this particular type, with the very famous heat kernel, of course, being part of it. So if you look at this a little more closely, this is a mixed equation. It contains an integral over the spatial domain, and it contains a Volterra operator, namely going from 0 to t, not surprisingly, because it's a time-dependent problem. So how do you solve problems of this particular type? Well, it turns out you discretize in space. I think finite element would be one of the methods of choice. Then you arrive at the generally large system of first-kind Volterra equations, which you have to solve in time. And surprisingly, there are very few results dealing with the anerror analysis if you collocate in space and then do collocation in time. So one of the very illuminating papers was the paper by Hamina and Saarinen in MathComp in 1994. So this is a very nice starting point for this. There was also a thesis by Hämäläinen in 98 dealing with cases. So in these papers, what you do, you choose collocation spaces in space, Sm plus D, D using my notation. And the special cases here were the case, well, sorry, that's the space, the space in space. So they use piecewise linear Z0 polynomials in space, and they use the piecewise linear polynomials continuous in time. So there's a convergence analysis for, in a way, the most elementary case. But it would be much of great interest to sort of both from the mathematical and the computational point of view to try to extend this analysis to higher order time stepping, and especially as I shall mention briefly in a moment, is it perhaps possible when you do the time stepping, solving this system of first order equations, to get at the same expense local superconvergence at certain time stepping points. So this is still a completely open problem, and also the analysis when you have t equal to minus 1 in the time stepping, you choose a piecewise continuous polynomials with jumps at the mesh points. So this just to show the analysis on the preceding slide is of importance, and there are still many open questions related to problems that contain sort of an ingredient, a first-kind Volterra equation. Incidentally, for those who are interested in some sort of background, I prepared sort of a summary of some of the references. I think there are some more copies being made. May not quite be enough. So most of the references I'm mentioning here are sort of indicated in more detail on this little handout. I apologize that I did not leave the back blank for scribbling, so you have to scribble around the margins or listen to the talk. Well, just for the sake of comparison, for those who do not know these results, what happens if instead of looking at first kind equations, like over here, I look at second kind equations? Well, we know that second kind equations are well posed, so intuitively not much can happen if you use collocation methods. So if you do the same approach, this is a typical second kind equation. At the moment I use the same linear Volterra operator, but let me mention all this analysis carries over in a very simple way to nonlinear problems. So if you do collocation in the same spaces, and of course what you can do when you have a second kind equation, once you have found the collocation solution, you can do a post-processing step. In other words, you iterate the collocation solution, like in Fredholm equations, and usually you gain something. Not quite as much as in Fredholm equations, but you gain a little bit. And this result sort of summarizes what will happen. Again, as I said before, not surprisingly, you do get order h to the m convergence, where h, m is the mesh diameter, the maximum distance between consecutive mesh points. So you have order h to the m convergence for any set of the collocation points. If you choose the collocation points a little more carefully by satisfying this orthogonality condition, which of course everybody recognizes as indicating that the interpolatory quadrature formula using the CIs as abscisses has a slightly higher degree of precision, namely m instead of m minus 1, then in fact the iterated collocation solution, but not the collocation solution itself, has a slightly higher order of convergence. So you might call this a little unfairly perhaps global superconvergence on the interval, but of course you have paid a price, you have done a post-processing. But in applications, of course, very often you use this post-processing not to calculate a better solution for any point t, but in applications you may want to have a very accurate solution maybe at the end of the interval of integration. So you may use this iterated collocation solution selectively for certain points in I. If you just look at the mesh points, then we are back on familiar ODE territory. If you sharpen this orthogonality condition to the condition I indicated here, then it turns out that if you look at the iterated collocation solution at the mesh points, then you can get as high as order h to the 2m if this is the maximum value, m minus 1. So you have maybe collocate at the Gauss points. Then you can show that if you delete it, then the order of convergence is at the mesh point is just a global convergence, completely different from ODEs. But if you iterate, then you get back the optimal order of local superconvergence at the mesh points. So this is sort of ODEs, and it's an interesting question you might think about. There must be a relationship between the two things. So for example, if in this in this equation here, you choose the kernel just to be a constant, then of course the problem is equivalent to an ODE, and you can in fact show if you solve the ODE, y prime equals essentially lambda y of t, then collocation using polynomials of degree m, which are continuous, gives you the identical result as when you solve the integral equation using polynomials of degree m minus 1 having jumps at the mesh points. So this post-processing in the ODE case is basically, I mean, if you look at the structure of a Runge-Kutta method, then the explanation is really there. Because in some sense, these are equations that determine the stage values. And of course, we know all about the stage values. This means you use the step going from Tn to Tn plus 1. So this generalizes to Volterra equations. But the important thing to remember is that if you collocate at the Gauss points, then the collocation solution itself is not superconvergent at the mesh points. Again, the general collocation theory for smoother collocation spaces is still largely open. There are sort of certain results. The first negative result was found by Hung, showing that if you use the classical cubic splines, so the space S3, 2, then the collocation solution is divergent. But in contrast to ODEs, there are still a lot of gaps here. Well, let's move a little more into the present time. Well, but perhaps this, it might be useful. Let me see. Oh, that's the one I just showed. Maybe I don't want to repeat myself. Some of you might argue, well, if you look at applications, especially when we look at PDEs, parabolic problems, with an integral operator, a memory operator, and you discretize in space, then you don't get integral equations, but you get integral differential equations, which would, of course, contain, as a special case, just ODEs. So let me be very brief. Again, here, the results were derived in the last 15 years or so. So if you're ODE people, you dislike integrals, just cover up the integral term. You get the results for ODEs. So this is fairly straightforward. We do collocation in the space SM0. And we know if you do this for ODEs, then you just get a subclass of very important implicit Runge-Kutta methods or continuous implicit Runge-Kutta methods. So this approach extends to equations where you have this memory term. And the convergence results are not really surprising. You get global convergence of order h to the m, reflecting the degree m of the polynomials, both for the collocation solution, there should be an h here, and the first derivative. For the collocation solution itself, you get a little more if, again, you have this orthogonality condition. And you get the classical local superconvergence result. I have just written it down for the two important cases. For the Gauss points, you get order h to the 2m for the collocation solution, but only order h to the m for the derivative. While if you use the Radau 2 points, you get sort of the balanced local superconvergence at the mesh points, both for the collocation solution and its derivatives. So these results are very easy to prove. Again, there's a general theory, beautiful theory, derived by Miltai in the late 70s, early 80s for ODEs, where he considered all sorts of regularity conditions on the spline space, multiple collocation points. So there's a very beautiful complete convergence and stability theory, but this is largely open for Volterra integral differential equations. There are some results indicating when you have divergence. But again, the important case, as we know from ODEs, is the space where you have just continuity, but not continuity in the first derivative. Well, before going on, let me briefly summarize, just on one transparency, what we have done. So if you go in first kind equations, we have, second kind equations, we have nice behavior. We can have local superconvergence of order 2m in Volterra integral differential equations of order 1 and incidental also of order 2 and so on. You can prove analogous results to ODEs. If you go to first kind equations, then there are certain difficulties, as I've shown in the first two slides. And let me briefly address just one question which may be of interest when you solve single-layer potential equations, these mixed Fredholm-Volterra equations, where you do the time-stepping for a first-kind Volterra equation, it can be shown that, in general, whatever you choose for the collocation points, you do not get local superconvergence at the mesh points. So for first-kind equations and for numerical differentiation, this is not possible. But you can also show it is possible to have local superconvergence at the midpoints of each subinterval, if you choose the collocation points in a clever way. I will not specify what clever means. Let me just give an example, which, of course, is a very old example, not usually known in the context of collocation methods, but just as the so-called midpoint method for solving first-kind equations. Well, the midpoint method means you collocate in the collocation space with m equal to 1, so we have step functions, and you always collocate at the right endpoint. So the single collocation parameter Cm, C1 is equal to 1. But if you evaluate the collocation solution at the midpoint, then again intuitively you think you get something higher. In fact, the global convergence is just order h, but at the midpoint you get order h squared convergence. And of course you can extend this if you use collocation at the Lobato points, throwing away the point at zero, and you choose m odd, then you always get higher superconvergence. You gain one order at the midpoint. So this is a more general result. In fact, there are other sets of points where this is also true. So this may be exploited when you solve these systems of first-kind Volterra equations coming from boundary integral methods. Well, let me move slowly towards what I mentioned in the title, so-called integral algebraic equations. Don't blame me for the name. I did not invent the name. I think the name is sort of a misnomer, but it sort of makes sense. Well, let's look at the, suppose we have, in this particular example, we have four different Volterra operators, so operators of this particular type, integral from 0 to t, we have four different kernels. And suppose you look at the mixed system of equations. The first equation would be a second kind equation involving the unknown solutions y of t and z of t. The second equation is a first kind equation for these two functions. So this is a mixed system, and I'll give an example in a moment where systems of this particular type occur in inverse problems where you try to identify kernels in memory problems. So I come back to the example a little later. So we can sort of try to extend the notion of an index of a differential algebraic equation to this mixed system of integral equations. Where does the word integral algebraic equations come from? Well, the only explanation I have is if you look at these operators and you suppose that in the second equation you have constants. So if the kernels are constants, or if the kernels depend only on S but not on T, then of course you can differentiate the second equation. And since you differentiate with respect to the upper limit in integration, then you actually get an algebraic equation. So there is an algebraic equation built in, but in general, I think the terminology integral algebraic equations is a little loose. But anyway, so this is the sort of thing we are looking at. Again, if you look at this particular specific problem and you try to solve it, then of course you could say, well, I could perhaps solve by one of the two unknowns and then substitute into the first equation. But again, it depends on the unknown you solve with. So in one case, you get what you might call an index one problem, which is sort of a harmless problem. But in the other case, you get an index two problem. And let me just mention there are some very recent results, first results on collocation and the orders of approximation. Again, those familiar with differential algebraic equations of index one, meaning essentially that it can solve the algebraic constraint for the solution, plug into the ODE, and then you're okay. So this is very loose. So again, this is sort of what you would expect globally. And then, well, in the background, you have to remember, since we are solving as part of the whole problem first kind Volterra equations, we may have to be very careful on how to choose the collocation parameters. So it turns out this condition we have seen a little earlier, which was on another slide, comes in again. So you get convergence of the collocation solution approximations both to Y and Z only if these collocation parameters satisfy certain conditions. So this is a recent result in MathCom by Jean-Paul Calvin. So there are some results on index one integral algebraic equations, which are interesting, perhaps not surprising, because the techniques used for collocation applied to ODEs, they carry over in a fairly straightforward way. But as a footnote, maybe to the ODE people, I mentioned on one of the previous slides the results on collocation of this condition on a spectral radius of a matrix occurring in a system of first-order difference equations is a little over 20 years old. Jean-Paul Cauton did a very beautiful analysis, more in the ODE spirit. Of course, for the ODE people, this condition here is something like an asymptotic stability condition. When you look at the implicit Runge-Kutta methods and you talk about A or L stability or what have you. So there's an analysis. This analysis in the paper here is really based on basically ODE theory. So this is sort of underlying that whole thing. Well, as I said, mixed systems occur in many contexts. Let me just mention one mixed system here, which has been discussed mainly theoretically, but then also in a PhD thesis about 3 years ago. So in many ODEs, you have kernel identification problems. So suppose you have a problem of this particular type, which contains a memory operator, so you're looking at viscoelastic problems or heat conduction with memory, you may want to identify the so-called memory kernel in this Volterra-type operator. So in some sense, you solve an inverse problem. And of course, there is a big theory on inverse problems, especially in Italy and other places. So not a lot is known. But numerically, there are still many open questions. So to be very brief, basically, you solve an inverse problem, and what you have to solve in the end . Let's just look at these two problems here. So suppose if you were to look for a solution using this Fourier approximate expansion, I mean, this is also of interest when you do spectral methods for these particular problems, then you can boil down the whole thing to solving a system of second order Volterra integral equations coupled with a system of first kind Volterra integral equations. So this is straightforward analysis, but it turns out that numerically very little is known about on methods, good methods, efficient methods for solving. Oh, I should move the right slide. So as I said, there has been work by von Wolfensdorf and Jano. Of course, there is other work that goes back to Graselli and Lorenzi, especially to Bookgame, and then a lot of work by von Wolfensdorf and Jano on these particular problems. So there was a thesis a few years ago written under the supervision of von Wolfensdorf where these problems are analyzed numerically. But it's a difficult problem, and again, part of the difficulty is that you have a Volterra equation of the first kind or a system of first kind equations. If you want to use collocation methods, then one has to be a little careful. So we have reached sort of 1995, 96. Well, let's look at the question part of a summary before we move on. So the questions that arise out of these things is, well, in many applications, of course, the assumption that the kernel in these Volterra operators is smooth will no longer be valid. So you may have weak with single kernels, either of algebraic type or of logarithmic type. Then, in many cases, going back to the work of Volterra in the late 1920s, you may have Volterra-type operators where you have a delay function built in. So a typical delay function would be just t minus tau, where you have constant delays, or more general, non-vanishing delays. One type of delay that has interested me in the last few years is also a special case of vanishing delays, namely proportional delays. So you have delays of the form theta of t just qt. Q is a constant between 0 and 1. And you assume that you solve the integral equation on the interval 0 to t. So this delay vanishes at the point 0. And it turns out, even for very simple delay differential equations, y prime of t equal to a y of t plus b y of qt, the question on the order of convergence of collocation methods at the mesh points, and especially asymptotic stability, the analog of astability, is totally open. There are very few isolated results, but, and I come back to this a little later, this brings in new difficulties. Both vanishing delays, constant delays, are very easy to deal with, as we know from DDEs with constant delays or DDEs with non-vanishing delays. So difficulty comes in with certain types of vanishing delays. And of course, if you have questions about vanishing delays, don't ask me, ask Wayne. I mean, he knows all about vanishing delays. Additional difficulties come also in through the kernel singularities, because when you have smooth data, then the solution in general will not be smooth at the point zero. So derivatives or the solution itself can be bounded at the origin, even though all the data are smooth. So the question is, what happens when we have equations of this particular type? Do previous results on convergence, on which I've been focusing today, carry over? What happens if you go to integral algebraic equations of index 2 and higher? This will move us into the theory of differential algebraic equations. We know that collocation methods applied even to index 1 differential algebraic equations may not perform well if you collocate at the Gauss points. Then you can show, and I'll give an example of it later on, that you may not get what you want, because you sort of leave the manifold if you collocate at the Gauss points. So again, is it possible to sort of understand when a given differential algebraic equation, or as an extension, an integral algebraic equation, is what you might call, or what has been called, well, numerically well formulated? I end up with some very recent work on this question in a few minutes. So there's an interesting paper by Yuri Asher, and then by Yuri and Linda Petzold, where it is shown that when you do collocation methods, as I said, at Gauss points, things are not as nice as you would expect, because again, you have this symmetric collocation points. You may have to project back onto the manifold if you want to have suitable results. So there has been work on this by Roswitha Merz in Berlin and her co-workers on this, what they call numerical well-postness, or an equation being, a DAE being numerically well-post. So I come back to this in a moment. So these are some of the questions I would like to address fairly briefly. Again, continuing this survey, let me perhaps just look at what happens in weakly singular kernels. Let me go back to the first and second slide. If you go back to Volterra's work, but now instead of having just a kernel K, you now admit one of these integrable singularities, so an algebraic singularity or a logarithmic singularity. And again, you would like to solve this particular problem, first kind equation, under the condition that G at zero is equal to zero, to have a bounded solution at the origin. Well, it turns out the simple question, I mean, under what conditions on the collocation parameters do you get convergent collocation solutions? This is totally open. It has been open for many years. There is a partial result, which is a sufficient condition that I think it's necessary, but nobody has been able to prove it. So just a simple question, extending collocation methods from equations with smooth kernels to first kind equations with weakly single kernels brings in, I think, formidable mathematical difficulties. Maybe some of you here with fresh energy will be able to solve it by the end of the tea break, but this is a non-trivial problem. Suppose, and you can actually show, if you choose the collocation points that give you convergence for first kind equations with smooth kernels, you always observe numerically that they do also well when you have weak singularities, but there's no proof. So suppose you choose these points, can you get back to the optimal convergence order of H to the M? So remember, the approximation, the degree of approximation of the collocation space, Sm minus 1 minus 1, is H to the M, or N to the minus N. So it turns out if you work with uniform meshes, so if you put R equal to 1, then you have uniform meshes, the convergence order is only n to the minus alpha, regardless of how high degree of the polynomials are. And again, this is well known. In cases like these, where the solution has an unbounded derivative, then if you want to get back your optimal convergence order with respect to the piecewise polynomial space, you have to grade a mesh. This is one possibility if you want to stick with piecewise polynomials. So if you do a mesh grading with an R greater than 1, so you cluster your mesh points towards the origin where the trouble starts, then in fact you can get back your convergence order M if the grading exponent is at least M. You don't gain anything if you go beyond M, so the grading exponent is, where is it? Here. So again, weak singularities bring in problems because solutions have unbounded derivatives. Now this is an interesting question. Maybe I shouldn't show you the result. We know that if you work with piecewise constant functions, step functions, if you want to have a convergent collocation solution for first kind equations with smooth kernels, then this C1, the collocation parameter, has to be at least 1/2. Now you bring in weak singularities. Do you have to sharpen this? Do you have to move the C1 towards 1, or can you relax the condition? So intuitively, I could take an opinion poll. It's not quite clear. In fact, I won a bottle of wine in a bet with Italian colleagues some years ago. In fact, it turns out you can relax the condition. So you can show that if your singularity is alpha equal to 1/2, the standard weakly singular kernel, then you do get convergence if the collocation point is characterized by C1, which is roughly 0.31 or larger. So this sort of moves down. So this is the only result that tells you what to do, but if you go to piecewise polynomials of degree 1, which are discontinuous at the mesh point, there is no result at all. So this is very maddening, but that's it. Again, for the sake of a very brief comparison, let's just look at second kind equations. In second kind equations, we are basically okay again, provided you do again the mesh grading, which is sort of the complementary mesh grading. Again, this is a fairly old result, about 15 years old. And here is the explanation. So if you have the first kind equation, then the solution at the origin, of course, if you have smooth data, behaves like t to the alpha minus 1. In the second kind equation, it behaves like t to the minus alpha. If alpha is 1/2, of course, there's no big difference. And this is of interest, this relationship, in connection with another very important problem in applications that occurs also when you discretize partial integral differential equations which are singularly perturbed. So it's clear if you look at the singularly perturbed problem, if epsilon is 0, then you're solving a first kind equation. If epsilon is nice and big, then you're back in safe territory. But if you do the numerical analysis and the scientific computation, then, and suppose you have constructed a problem, and there are problems where alpha is not 1/2, then it's not quite clear, for example, how to grade the mesh. So if you move your epsilon close to 0, you move into first kind Volterra equation territory, then you have to change the mesh grading if alpha is not 0, is not 1/2. But at the moment, again, we do not understand, to my knowledge, there is no analysis with applications to collocation methods on how to choose the grading exponent. And when you do it numerically, you actually observe that the good grading for second kind Volterra equations becomes very bad if epsilon gets very, very small when you move into the first kind territory. Now, these questions are important because the limiting case when you look again at mixed systems, of course, is an integral algebraic equation, say these weakly single kernels, where the second system would be first kind equation with weakly single kernels. So again, this is an area that is both theoretically and computationally, at least with respect to collocation methods, completely open. Other a few more minutes. I don't want to say much about equations with delays here, except for one thing. We started out with Volterra integral equations with, of the first kind, with smooth kernels, where we have to be a little careful about how to choose the collocation points to get convergent collocation solutions in piecewise polynomial spaces. If you admit it, weakly single kernels, still without delay, then things got much more tricky, and there are many open questions. What happens if, again, you're going back to a very early paper of Volterra's? If you look at delay Volterra operators, where this theta of t is the proportional delay, and you solve the equation on the interval 0 t. Well, there's a very beautiful paper which tells you that this equation has a unique solution. That's marvelous. It's beautifully written, language-wise and also mathematically, but it shows the difficulties coming in through this proportional delay. So suppose you're looking at the first kind equation with this delay operator, where the integral goes from q of t to t, and you would like to do collocation. Well, we have no idea for which choices of the collocation points you do get a convergent collocation solution. And you can see the difficulty when you work, for example, on a uniform mesh. In the interval 0 to t1, the collocation points, which I'm sure you remember still from the first slide, and the collocation points multiplied by q, they overlap, they're in the same subinterval. If you go along, depending on q, some of these collocation points multiplied by q, they move out, so you have partial overlap, and then after a finite number of steps for any q between 0 and 1, you're back in the just what you might call pure delay phase. We understand how to analyze the pure delay phase, but we do not understand yet how to come to grips with this overlap and partial overlap. And this is also what makes the analysis for ODEs, as I said a moment ago, with proportional delays, so very difficult. It is easy to prove global convergence results for ODEs with proportional delays, even in nonlinear case, but to prove local superconvergence results is much, much more difficult because of this partial overlap. And this also leads to an interesting question, because you might say, if you look at this equation and you have a nice differentiable k, then in fact, if you differentiate, you get, roughly speaking, and it, well, here is the general equation if you differentiate. So if you have a special case which leads you back to proportional delay ODEs. So there is a lot of interaction between these delay Volterra integral equations and delay ODEs. And what makes the analysis, this is also an open question, of collocation methods for equations of this type very difficult. So assume that KTT is strictly positive, divide by the whole thing. You have an equation of the type Y of T is equal to some function times Y of QT plus an integral operator of this delay type. If you apply collocation methods, then you can immediately see why the analysis is now much more complicated due to this particular term. Just write down the collocation equation and try to understand when you get convergence. So again, these special vanishing delays, they bring in wonderful excitement and wonderful opportunities, keeping people busy for a long time. Well, let me conclude by mentioning a few reasons why we look at all these generalizations by means of some illustrations and some concrete examples. So part of my work on collocation methods for Volterra type equations with delays and weakly single kernels really came out from work with Terry Herdman and Gene Cliff, John Burns at Virginia Tech. These people and their students have been concerned for many years with looking at mathematical models for describing the elastic motion of a, say, 3 degree of freedom airfoil section with a flap. So there's an extensive theory using semigroup theory, beautiful mathematical theory grew out of this. Essentially, this modeling leads to a system of, say, 8 equations of this particular type. These are sort of neutral type integral differential equations with, in this case, a constant delay, but you might also wish to investigate variable delays to get the more subtle model. And the interesting thing is, of course, this matrix A0, so the matrix which multiplies this term, is singular. So typically, you have, say, zeros in the last row or in the last few rows. The matrix A1, which is in the kernel here, is generally a nice matrix, except, well, this is nice for the mathematician and the numerical analyst, at least one element is weakly singular. So the solution, of course, is not regular, even if the data is regular. The right-hand side is nice. So how do you solve problems of this particular type? Well, you could look at model problems, of course. If you just look at a single equation, say, scalar equation with A0 being a non-zero number, you can write it as a delay integral equation or a delay integral differential equation with constant delay, and we understand essentially everything about this. But the true setting involves, of course, a system, and say if I look at the 2x2 example, this would typically be a system of this particular type, where, say, this kernel is weakly singular. So again, there are many subtleties trying to understand the regularity. So as far as the regularity of the solution is concerned, a lot, essentially everything, has been derived by the Virginia Tech people. But numerically, we know very little. And again, the difficulty comes in because this is another example of an integral algebraic system which contains delays and weakly single kernels. And the type of the equation depends on the behavior of the kernels in the second equation in this example. So you may have an index one problem, you may have an index two problem, and you may have solutions that have unbounded derivatives at the origin. So this really brings in a lot of challenges for the numerical analyst. And this moves us to my very last portion. Do you have another 2 minutes, maybe? I remember lunch. About so-called integral algebraic equations. So let's go to differential algebra. Well, I don't want to show this, perhaps. This is, I can use it as a dessert. So let's briefly go to DAEs and come back to an offhand remark I made earlier. If you use collocation methods for DAEs, so I have written down a very simple equation up there which has variable coefficients if delta is not zero. So if you use, in a naive way, collocation, takes the most elementary collocation method, the continuous Euler method, if you apply it to this index one problem, then it turns out things don't really, I mean, the implicit Euler method is nice. It always works. But it does not work here because you can see you only reflect the asymptotic behavior at infinity if you have a step size restriction. So in some sense, the problem is not numerically well formulated. And this example is due to Roswitha Merz and some of her, and a collaborator of her in Berlin. So we would like to understand what numerically well formulated really means. So on the handout, you have some references on recent work. It turns out, if you really understand what's going on behind this DAE, if you can find what they call the inherently regular differential equation, if you reformulate the problem in a slightly different way, and there's not a unique way in general of doing this, and if you then apply the collocation method, everything is fine. So in other words, trying to understand the structure of the method and sort of decouple what you might view as the inherently regular ODE, then you really understand what's going on and you get good methods. So this is really current work that is going on with people in Berlin and myself, and also involving people at Virginia Tech, trying to understand the same question for integral algebraic equations. Of course, the big difference in integral algebraic equations is that you're now moving in an infinite dimensional setting. So this gives rise of so-called abstract differential algebraic equations and trying to formulate integral algebraic equations as abstract DAEs, and so to try to understand how to formulate such a problem properly so that methods like collocation methods really work. And let me, since the one of the words in this thematic weird fields is computational changes, here are some. So there is a lot of analytical gaps to be filled, and I think there are some very beautiful numerical challenges, computational challenges that grow out of all these equations. So moving from simple-looking Volterra equations, boundary integral equations, to these abstract integral algebraic and differential algebraic equations. Thank you very much.